If I'm a virgin and you're a virgin, then who's driving the car?
Hello and welcome to our Riverdale podcast, brought to you by the Aficionados Podcast Network. My name is Robin Jeffrey. I'm a 28-year-old actor and artist. I like brooding anti-heroes, feminist agendas, and I remember way too many details that no one else cares about. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey pretty much everywhere, and Brittany came up with our fun fact this episode, which is, what is the first movie that you went and saw in theaters after the lockdown and everything? I do believe our answer is the same, potentially, because I think...
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Because I think... Didn't we go to the movie together?
Okay, you tell me your answer, because I'm pretty sure mine's different.
Okay, then maybe you and Sam went to a movie before me and Emily and all four of us went to a movie together
yes.
for the first time. Okay. Anyway, my first one was Jungle Cruise. Me and Sam and Emily and Brittany all went together to Jungle Cruise. It was great. We went to VIP. It felt very luxurious and it made us so happy.
VIP has spoiled me for... So, like, anyone, especially if you're American, if you don't know, VIP is where you get these huge, like, recliner leather chairs and then they, like, bring you food. I think that's, like, what a lot of American theaters do, but, like, ours is separated out. And it is the best way to see a movie. There's so few people
I think
in there.
That's the only time I've ever done VIP. VIP is not available where I live now, but that's okay because it's like quite expensive and I'm just a baby.
Wait, there's no VIP Cineplex where you are?
Not in Red Deer. There's Cineplex, but we only have one theater, and then we have a cheapy theater that's not like a Cineplex theater.
Oh my god, that thing needs to be renovated. That is unacceptable to me.
That's okay. I'll be all right.
Well, I'm not going to be all right.
Well, luckily, you don't have to live here.
You know what? You're right. You got me there.
By the way, who are you even?
My name is Brittany Ray. I'm a 33-year-old artist and writer. I like badass moms and long naps. I'm on Twitter at Britannia, where I can be found attempting to be interesting and bullying politicians. I mean, that's literally all I do. I got to change my bio. I'm going to change it every time.
Okay, that's cute. I love it.
For what I'm up to on Twitter that week.
I love that.
And the movie that I saw, like the first movie back in theaters to have the theater experience, actually wasn't Jungle Cruise. It was Sam, my wife, and I going to see The Conjuring: The Devil Made Me Do It.
Mm.
Oh my god.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that was...
Well, I'm glad that our answers are different. That makes it more interesting.
Exactly. And then we went again. And then we went again.
Didn't see this coming from you.
I know, it's shocking. I guess we really like those movies. I don't know. That's crazy.
Who knows? Brittany? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling like I definitely still have a bit of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very congested still.
You sound so much better than last week, though.
I definitely feel better. I just can't kick the congestion or, like, the throat issues. So,
which is totally normal, I feel like, because I think when we all, well, all of us except for Sam or Em, I can't remember who didn't have it, in May of 2022?
Yeah.
I believe. Like, I had a cough for quite a long time afterward,
yes,
even after I was fine fine on all other levels.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But, like, otherwise, I mean, I guess I'm okay.
Yeah.
Today we have words to say about episode 707 of Riverdale, Dirty Dancing.
Yes, and our step-by-step notes for this season were written by Sheila Daly, aka Blanche, and we thank her so much for everything she's done for us this season, and everything she will do for us this season. The episode is titled Dirty Dancing, which is a 1987 American romantic drama dance film with Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey, and it's about Baby Houseman, who's a young woman who falls in love with her dance instructor, Johnny Castle, at a vacation resort.
Did you watch it like I told you to?
Girl, as if I have the time. One day I'll get around to it, but your girl's so busy. Big Brother Canada had finished this week. I had to watch that. You understand.
Oh, of course.
Great. Well, Brittany, I'm really interested to hear how you feel about this. Would you like to give this episode a toot or a boot?
I'm going to give it a toot. I actually didn't hate it, and I felt that a lot of the social issues were handled with more sensitivity than
they have done in the past.
They ever have been. So that was intriguing to me.
That is so good, because sometimes I feel like you don't care for the stuff. And, like, I don't care for it either. Like, all this homophobic stuff is just... We'll talk about it later, but it's a bummer to watch in 2023, I gotta say. It's just a straight-up bummer to watch. But I did like this episode also. I had a good time watching it, and I feel like all of the, like, sadness that happens in the Kevin storyline is sort of, like, not overshadowed, but is sort of, like... And not forgiven? Well, I'm trying to figure out what the word I mean, but, like, it's sort of, like, is helped by how lovely and wonderful of an ally Archie is.
The blow is certainly softened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Well, you guys, Blanche cut this into four storylines. We have the Veronica storyline, the Jughead storyline, the Betty storyline, and then the Archie and Kevin storyline. I know that I think we want to do Veronica Jughead, and then, Brittany, I'll leave it up to you whether you'd like to sandwich the homophobia stuff in the middle, or if you'd like to talk about it at the end. What do you think?
Let's sandwich it so that it's not okay. What we end on.
Okay, sounds good. So we're gonna start with the Veronica storyline. Cool. So Brittany hasn't, she like just got her voice back, so she isn't gonna do all the notes, but she is going to do the notes for the Veronica storyline, and then I'll handle the notes for the rest of it.
Sorry, gang. I just still have a smidge of the COVID.
Truly, that is fine.
All right, Ronnie's storyline, which I really enjoyed.
Yay.
So Smithers approaches Veronica, who's tanning indoors with a telegram. That's what you have to do when you live in Vancouver, you know?
I guess so, yeah.
With a telegram from her parents. The note says that because of her behavior with Betty, her allowance is cut off. They've already made arrangements for her to get a job at the Babylonium, and Veronica is pissed.
I think it's interesting that they're just bringing in, like, everybody getting a job. Like, Frank made Archie get a job at Pops, and then Betty sort of kind of has a job, if you'll call it that, at Riverdale Grandstand, and now Veronica's getting a job, and Jughead works at Pep Comics, so it's just interesting that they're just like, quick, everyone get a job!
Well, it makes sense for, like,
or, you get a job, you get a job, you get a job!
Exactly. It makes sense for the time, because they thought that idle hands did the devil's work, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of, like, letting kids, like, be kids and have childhoods and stuff, you had to go to work so that you were not tempted by the devil.
That's a good point, you know, because especially because they're just like, clearly we made that mistake. All of these kids are being tempted by the devil. So that's what they're, yeah, that makes total sense. But which I just think it's funny that so suddenly funny. It's like, quick, quick!
These children, they are having independent thought. We must stop them!
Help!
Ronnie arrives at the Babylonian movie theater and meets her new boss, Mr. Lindley. She tells him movie theaters are her happy place. I have thoughts about this later. Mr. Lemley explains that he can't afford many employees, and it's just him, Veronica, and Clay. Despite how she feels about her parents, she seems excited about her new job.
Yeah, like, it's nice of her parents. I mean, it, you know, it's because they're, like, this is their establishment soon to be. But it also, like, works with her interests, so I feel like it really worked out that way. And, like, I don't really see Hiram and Hermione being like, hey, wouldn't this be nice for our daughter who likes movies? And it just is a coincidence, I guess, for them.
I think it's a quintessential rich kid punishment. It's not a real punishment because she already likes these things. They went easy on her.
As soon as we saw that the Blackboard Jungle was the movie that was playing, I was just like, that was the name of the season 2 mid-season premiere.
Oh, that's right.
I don't know why. Like, there are some episodes of this show that are just, like, absolutely, like, nailed into my mind for, like, whatever reason. And then there are some that, like, if you said that to me, I'd be like, I'm not sure if that was a title or not. You know,
like,
what I mean?
Like, I actually don't even, I've never even seen Riverdale before.
Like, the Blackboard Jungle was the episode where the serpent started going to school at Riverdale High instead of Southside High.
Oh, that's right.
And I just loved season 2. So I remembered Blackboard Jungle, and so it was cool to see it up there. Why is this not the Bijou? Like, the Babylonium is not a movie theater.
That's gone.
The Bijou is. It must, like,
yeah.
But, like, even then, like, this isn't the Babylonium set, obviously, but
I'm pretty sure this is the Babylonium set, just redressed.
They just redid it?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just like, did they even, I feel like they've gone to the Bijou, like, twice. Like, they could use the Bijou. Like, why don't they just call it the Bijou? It's just annoying because, like, the Babylonium was not a movie theater. You already had a movie theater. And, like, Blanche says later in her notes, like, they renamed the Twilight Drive-In to the Starlight Drive-In. And it's like, but why?
Maybe because it's, like, supposed to be, like, this alternate universe, like, sort of telling you everything's not quite as it seems.
Yeah.
Or, and I think this is also possible, everyone forgot.
Yeah. I mean, too bad.
The writers team was like, it was called the Babylonium, right? And they're like, yeah, that's definitely right.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll just use the Babylonium again. We never had a movie theater.
No.
Our Jughead definitely didn't go there for his birthday in season 1.
No.
But whatever.
Honestly, it's that those places were too expensive to go back to.
Yeah, probably.
Like, the CW, like, I cannot express how no, just zero money the CW had.
I know. I just, like, I don't think we ever... And if we did, it was so forgettable, like, seeing the actual lobby of the Bijou. We really only saw the theater. So I'm like, the Bijou could have been anything. We've only ever really talked about the Bijou, you know? That's... But I'm being hung up on something pedantic. Let me move on.
You hung up on something pedantic?
So, Veronica, I know...
What?
What? What is this podcast even?
This is unrealistic. I don't think that would happen.
The Aficionados podcast, if Robin didn't get hung up on... on something pedantic.
10 minutes long.
20 minutes long, yeah. So Veronica says that the first movie she ever went to was Babes in Arms. It was a 1939 American film version of the 1937 coming-of-age Broadway musical of the same title. It concerns a group of youngsters trying to put on a show to prove their vaudevillian parents wrong and make it to Broadway. The original Broadway script was significantly revamped, restructured, and rewritten to accommodate Hollywood's needs. So if this is 1955 and Veronica is... 17?
Yeah, they're 16 or 17, I think.
16 or 17. So let's see. 1955 minus 1939 was... Wait, my girl went to the movie when she was one? How do you even remember that?
Well, she might not remember it. Like, I know that my first movie that I saw was The Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
But...
I think mine was Tarzan, maybe?
Like, I don't remember it, but that was the first movie I went to.
Okay. Well... Okay. My only other note about this scene was that I just love Clay. I just love Clay so much.
I really like him too.
Yeah. When, like, they brought in Tabitha, we were like, yeah, we like Tabitha. And then she became, like, our baby, you know? She was, like, the most special thing in our whole lives.
Of course.
And Clay just, like, showed up, was in, like, 7 episodes. And I'm just like, this is my child. I don't care that he's only been here for 7 episodes. This is my best friend.
Exactly. I love having a little nerd around.
Yeah.
And he's gentle and he's kind.
He's a good person. Yeah.
Speaking
He's better than all of Kevin's other boyfriends, I gotta say.
Oh my god, he's so superior to every other dude. Like, because, listen, he dated Fangs, but, like, they were not good.
Yeah.
They were not good together. And the reason I say that is because now I think Fangs could do better. And then he did do better.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm so good. So at work, Veronica and Clay get to know each other. Clay says that he wants to study filmmaking college. Veronica says that she doesn't love acting, but she does love being on movie sets, and he suggests that one day she could run her own studio and hire him as a director. Mr. Lemley walks in, and Ronnie asks when the Evening Rush will start. He tells her it's probably not coming, and that they have a lot of slow nights here. He explains that people are more interested in TV nowadays, and that the new drive-in theater, The Starlight, is taking most movie business. Veronica argues that watching movies at the Babylonium is special, and they should make a commercial during Riverdale Grandstand.
Yes. So yeah, like I said, Blanche is like, why did we rename the Twilight? I don't know. They're doing a bunch of random stuff that seemed to have no real purpose. So that's just classic Riverdale. You know, you might recall last scene, one of my notes was, I love you so much, Clay. My first note, my first note in this scene was also, I love you, Clay. So there you go. I just thought it was interesting that Veronica said that she didn't really want to be in front of the cameras. Cause first of all, she's literally in this commercial. But also she was just like, I'm the head actress in our town. Like, she's like, I'm always in front of the camera. And I was just interesting to hear that she actually, like, doesn't really care for that and she'd rather be behind the camera. I think that's really cool for her and sort of, like...
I think that makes perfect sense for her.
Turns the stereotype on its head, and I think that's cool.
It, like, to me, it clocks perfectly because Ronnie has always liked to be the power, not the face. But she also is a little bit vain and she likes a bit of attention.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, this made total sense to me because he's just like, well, no one's coming to the movies and stuff. Like, we have been for the past 7 episodes, like, talking about going to the movies at the Babylonium. Everyone's like, we should go see this at the Babylonium. We should go see this at the Babylonium. But no one ever goes.
Yep.
They always go to do something else. So, like, I kind of liked that they sort of dropped that in earlier in this season already, that, like, no one ever goes to the movies. They just talk about going and then go to something else.
I completely agree. I also really like that, Veronica is so passionate about the movies because I don't know why, but it feels very organic for her. Like, it feels like she would love stories and she would love, you know, talking about those things. And it's so much better than any of the business venture storylines she has had. Because, like, I don't know, for this one, I kind of buy it.
Yeah, I agree. And we've also seen her relate to Jughead on that front this season already, too.
Exactly. So. It's very viable.
Yeah.
Veronica records a commercial for the Babylonium that is literally the Nicole Kidman AMC ad. That was also my note. It is so funny. She shows it to Mr. Lemley and asks what he thought. He said he loved it, but admits that her parents are buying the theater to turn into a parking lot, and he's been finalizing the sale for months. Veronica's horrified. This is not even good business.
No. And also, like, I was so mad during the scene because he was like, they're going to turn it into a... And then I literally out loud, I was like, a casino, a casino. And then they said, a parking lot. And I said, why am I a better writer than the writers? Turn it into a casino.
I actually don't know if gambling was legal then.
Hello, that's the joke. Oh, okay. That's why it's not a casino.
Like, let me look it up, because I don't want to sound like a fool. But my Veronica's parents said, we are going to bulldoze this movie theater, which still stands to make a profit if someone smart was running it, and instead turn it into a parking lot. Now, I'm pretty sure that no one had come up with paid parking lots yet, and if they did, it's not the whole lot. So, like, what's your business plan here?
What's the parking lot for? Like, what's the Babylonium next to? So it looks like casinos were made legal in 1931.
Okay, so you can have a casino.
At least in Nevada. At least in Nevada, it says. So that's maybe is not true, actually. Come legal in New York. Okay, that doesn't feel right.
Okay, when was paid parking invented? Okay, so Oklahoma in 1935. Okay. But, like, these were meters. They weren't, like, the whole, like, lot charge.
Okay, so it's possible. Okay.
So I must once again question the logic.
Okay, I'm really having a hard time finding, like, a specific answer. So it is possible that casinos weren't allowed at that point. So shout out to the River Brunel writers for knowing that. But I also was just like, wouldn't that have been such a good Easter egg, though, if it had been legal, that they could be like, no, they want to turn it into a casino because that's what the Babylonium freaking is.
Listen, from your mouth to their ears.
Yeah.
Actually, they're busy right now, so maybe not.
And, like, not to play devil's advocate for Veronica's parents, but she's just like, what? They don't even like movies, or, like, whatever. I don't know. She's just like, they just want to destroy things. And I'm like, what if they bought the theater because they liked the theater when they lived there? You know? Like, maybe they bought the theater because it meant something to them. I just care about the parent characters, you know?
Yeah, but turning that into a parking lot kind of solidifies that they don't care about it.
I don't know. I just wish that the parent characters across the board had more agency. Well, maybe not agency, but, like, the characters that I love have more agency.
How about depth and complexity?
Yes, because right now they're just, like, locked in a cage. Someone go and break Tom Keller out of the prison he's in. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, that's my friend Tom Keller. He doesn't deserve what you're doing to him. That's why I just, like, wish that we thought about the parent characters more, because, like, clearly people care about them. Including me.
They're just, like, simply the easiest villains, I think, and,
yeah.
It's like the CW curse. The parents are always the evil ones, but every once in a while they're allowed to have complexity, but then no.
Yeah, yeah.
Machin, I am so sorry, baby. Veronica eyes a painting that's hung up at the Pembroke and notes that it must be worth a lot.
She's, like, fully drinking a cocktail or whatever, and I'm just like, you're a teen.
I mean, true, but, like, okay. It's extremely funny that she looks into Edward Hopper and she's like, I bet that's worth a lot of money. I'm like, you know what? You're right.
I could probably sell that. It probably is. Like, it tracks for me that, like, Hermione and Hiram have alcohol here and that she's just drinking it, but I'm also just like, more things that we're, like, showing teens that it's okay to do as a teen. You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess she's technically supervised by Smithers.
He's, like, not even in there.
It's true. I don't know. Yeah. You're right. Veronica offers to buy the Babylonium from Mr. Lemley. She offers her fancy painting in trade for the theater because it's worth a lot more than her parents are offering him. She says she wants to keep this place open because of how special it is, and Mr. Lemley seems to agree.
If I was Mr. Lemley, I'd be like, you're gonna make me try and sell it, though? Because until I sell this painting, I don't have any money or an establishment. I mean, I'd be like, can you sell it and then give me the money that it's worth?
Like, do you want to, like, give me some of the contacts?
It's like, more work?
Give me a little bit of a leg up? I mean, I'm sure she would.
Who are you talking to at Crestbees? Like, can you give me a business card or something? So Crestbees is Christie's ?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And then, the other thing is that he, like, has her make this whole commercial, and then he turns around and, like, she says, I'm gonna make a commercial. He goes, okay. She makes the commercial, and then he goes, actually, it's being bought by your parents and getting turned into a parking lot. And I'm like, then why did you let them make the commercial if you thought it was just gonna be a parking lot, though? Like, it's not like this was gonna change everything and, you know? I don't know. I thought that was a little bit weird that he's just like, okay, even though he knew it was gonna be for nothing.
That was the part that cracked me up the most. He was like, oh, yes, thank you so much for your Nicole Kidman moment. This was, in fact, as memeable as we could get in the 1950s, but I will be selling this establishment instead. Your ad was simply just not on the Nicole Kidman level.
Thank you so much for the ad. I am going to remember it fondly, but I'll never watch it again and no one will.
Thank you. Thank you for your waste of time.
Yeah, there's actually no point to it. Thanks, though. I love their little uniforms, though. That's something that I forgot to put in my notes that I did want to say. Little uniforms are very cute.
Agreed. Veronica tells Smithers to send a telegram to her parents to let them know that she bought the Babylonium. And it'll never be a parking lot. And to tell Uncle Orsam hi. Smithers is clearly on her side.
I love Smithers. The whole thing about them being like, dear Veronica, stop, blah, blah, blah. Like, when I first watched it, now I know that, like, it means period, blah, 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 period, blah, 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 period, yeah, like, end of sentence. But it was very funny to be like, dear mom and dad, quit it. Dear mom and dad, don't.
Just taking it seriously, like, literally.
Yeah. Dear mom and dad, stop it.
Dear mom and dad, get out.
Yeah, exactly. So that was very funny. But also she's like, here's the full telegram. And she just recites it for Smithers. And Smithers is like, guess I'll just memorize this. Like, babe, can you write it down? Damn.
I like that it was short. She was like short and to the point. Also, yeah. Who's Uncle Orson?
So Veronica was talking to Hermione on the phone in 701 when she first got here. And Hermione was just like, I can't talk. I'm at a party. I can't come down for like Thanksgiving or like whatever it was. I can't remember. But here comes your Uncle Orson or whatever. So basically Orson Welles. And so he was name dropped. Yeah.
I was going to ask, is it Uncle Orson?
Yeah. So
like Orson Welles?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, fair enough.
So he was name dropped in 701 and now they're bringing him back. So
I forgot that.
So there you go. That's a little Veronica storyline. Enjoyable. I liked it.
I liked it too. I like when Veronica is in a business storyline, but that it doesn't involve her parents.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Physically eating up all of the space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. So we're going to do Jughead now, which is also another really small one, but ends in a huge ass twist, which I love.
I actually really like Jughead's storyline in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So like we said earlier, I'm going to handle the notes for the rest of the episode. So Jughead gets called to the principal's office about his newly published comics. Featherhead and Werther's do not approve of the horror genre and say that he should be ashamed. Jughead says that he's proud of his writing. They say that these comics are on the same level as pornography and say that he must sign a contract where he agrees not to write them anymore or else he'll be expelled.
Yeah. So I really like this storyline because it is a great example of satanic panic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And also a great example of sort of how full circle we've come about censorship.
Mm.
But because this episode, I think, was written by someone who has a more deft hand than the other writers, it felt less like we were being clobbed over the head with, like, the obvious, like, terminology, like censorship and puritanical and things like that. Things that, like, we as an audience are really smart about, and we already know these things because we're currently living it again. But they...
Let me grab the name of the writer here.
I actually had it.
Aaron Allen wrote this.
Yes. So he's written one or two a season for the whole show, and I think this is... The way he wrote it was very conscious of the fact that these social issues are unfortunately timeless, but he didn't have the modern objections to them that would take us out of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So all of it was handled as if it was actually happening in the 50s with a rebellion that would happen in the 50s.
Yeah.
And so, like, for me personally, like, when they're doing this whole story about, like, censorship and satanic panic and, you know, trying to stop kids from learning or expressing themselves, it felt very, like, dutifully researched and handled and written.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like the storyline.
Yeah. I think that, like, they're like, we are upset about the content, and they're like, it's terrifying and bad, and it makes people want to kill people, I guess, or whatever. But I'm like, no one's bringing up the fact that he's doxing his friends, though. I'm gonna bring it up every single episode. It looks just like Betty, and the character's name is Betty. Like, are we gonna, like, can Betty not look at these and sue for using her likeness? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I wonder if she doesn't even care.
Maybe, I don't know. But, Jughead saying all these kinds of things, like, things are a bunch of hooey and all this stuff, like he's doing all those 50s buzzwords, which I loved. I wonder if it's because it says Jughead Jones on the contract, and I'm like, maybe that means it's not legally binding because that's not his name, right? But here's what Blanche said. She said, on the contract they hand him, under name of student, it just says Jughead Jones. Is his name not Forsyth? Why must they erase every hint of Jug parents from this show? I'm like, wait, is his name not Forsyth? There's no way his name is Jughead, you know?
He could, but he could also, he doesn't have to use his legal name for that, I don't think.
For a contract?
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right.
I just think that's weird.
It is weird.
Why doesn't it say Forsyth? Why doesn't it say Forsyth?
You're right. It's weird.
Like, now that we've brought up FP, too, like, we know he exists. His name is FP. I mean, I guess they didn't say that his name was FP, but I assume it's still FP.
I don't know.
Which stands for Forsyth Pendleton. Anyway.
I mean, that could be... that could be, like, a props department mess up.
Yeah. That's true. So Jughead and Bernie, icon, are at work when Mr. Brad Rayberry walks in asking to be paid in cash because he doesn't trust banks. When Brad asks Jughead why he's not in school, he says he's probably dropping out because of the comic situation with Featherhead and Werther's, and Brad asks him if he wants to go to lunch.
Y'all, why is Brad Rayberry just Ron Swanson?
Kinda is, right?
Like, are you gonna look at me and tell me that I'm wrong?
Yeah. No, I'm not. Absolutely not.
He doesn't trust banks.
Uh-huh. Oh, I believe it. Yeah.
I see it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna start the next thing, so what do you think?
I'm gonna be honest, babe. I forgot what I was gonna say.
You're like, I got one syllable into it, and then it was gone.
That's usually how it goes.
Yeah. Okay. At Pops, Jughead apologizes for stealing Brad's novel. Brad says he probably overreacted, and also that Jug should go back to school. Jughead doesn't understand why he has to choose between school and his writing. Brad agrees that he shouldn't and asks about Werther's. Jughead's like, hey, it was wrong of me to take that book. And I was like, then why did you do it?
Curiosity, I guess.
Why did you do it? Yeah.
Do be killing cats.
I was like, why is this dude being Jughead's dad? He has a dad. We just talked about him. His name is FP.
They can't afford Skeet.
Literally, use all the budget you have left for it. It's very important. I will give you $20.
That would actually help, I think.
I think so, too. I'll do it.
That would at least buy Skeet some snacks on the plane.
That's what I'm saying.
Thank you.
My favorite part about this was how he was just like, tell me all about Werther's. What's his deal? What's his vibe? And he's just like asking all these questions. And I'm like, yeah, what's his mother's maiden name? What's the name of his first pet?
He's like, how can we exploit this man? And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, thank you, sir.
Blanche makes a really great point. She says, I get that I sound like a broken record here, but imagine this plot with Gladys. Minus the ending scene, of course. I'm sorry, but I just don't care about Brad. He's literally just some guy to me. The whole thing about him dropping out of high school would have been so much more meaningful with Gladys, since she also dropped out of high school, and because she's his mom.
But Gladys isn't a writer, though.
I mean, yeah, but, I mean, I get it. Like, I think that would be, I mean, then they would just have to change the writer thing.
I guess, yeah. I definitely see that, and I will always feel frustration when your, like, favorite character is very obviously fitting into something, and the writers are like, we have to ignore that for now in order to make the story go forward.
Yeah.
So I understand that frustration completely. I do think it's nice that Jug has a writer mentor.
Yeah. Who was it? I feel like, did he have one in the regular storyline?
I actually can't remember. I think...
Me neither.
Guys, I do not remember.
Wait. I sort of feel like there's some weird void in my memory right now, but I also don't remember him having, like, another writer friend to talk to, other than, like, the other Stonewall kids or something. Like, some of his Stonewall professors, maybe?
Yeah, one of them jumped out a window, and then that, like, who's to say?
Yeah. All right, well, Jughead arrives at Brad's apartment. He tells Brad he doesn't want to give up writing, even if he has to give up school. Brad suggests he does keep writing, only under a pseudonym. Jughead is worried that Werther's might be suspicious if he just altogether stops writing comics, and Brad says he should just switch genres and only put his name on the comics he'll approve of, like Super Duck!
It's a brilliant plan. The minute he was like, yeah, you can't write these, I was like, this kid needs a nom de plume.
Yep, it was so smart. I did think it was funny that Jughead is, like, purposefully disheveled in this scene for some reason. He's got, like, this one hair that hangs out over his forehead. I'm just like, I just think it's, like, an interesting scene to have chosen, because I feel like there are other scenes that he could have also been purposefully disheveled in.
He's been through some stuff.
Yeah. I also, like, need to know what the pseudonym is. I can't believe they don't tell us this episode, what is the pseudonym? Tell me.
They might not have come up with it yet.
I want to know.
I also want to know.
Super Duck was a comic book character created in 1943 for what was then MLJ Comics and is now Archie Comics by staff artist Al Fagali.
I love that it's Archie Comics. It makes my heart happy.
Yeah. It's also cool. Like, it makes a whole, like, meta type of thing going on, you know?
100%.
That Super Duck was Archie Comics, and yeah. As his name implies, Super Duck, nicknamed Soup, was originally a parody of Superman, even down to a red and blue costume, so... I hope Jughead feels inspired to write Super Duck comic, because he has to do two different comics now. Like, that's a lot of work, but...
He's gonna get paid bank.
Yep.
I hope.
Me too. Jughead and Brad meet with Featherhead and Werther's. They ask who the hell Brad is, and he says he's Jughead's new mentor and colleague. They explain that Jughead has decided to stop writing horror comics and start writing for a family-friendly Super Duck. Werther's protests, but Brad cuts him off, saying if they don't lay off, then he'll escalate things and bring this to the Supreme Court. Featherhead is threatened and says that since Super Duck is harmless, they can let this go for now.
I love that, like, even he knows he can only take his, like, moral panic so far.
Yes, yeah.
And then he's like, oh, yeah, I have been outmastered here.
Right. Featherhead is like, I'm the boss here, but, like, I'm not the boss of all time. There are higher bosses than I. Yeah.
There are other bosses to fight.
Yeah. The big bad evil guy is still above me. Jughead's got Cody face this this scene. Mr. Rayberry is somehow a lawyer now. And then my other note made me laugh was that Featherhead is like looking and he's just like, oh, Super Duck is delightful. I laugh upon Super Duck. I love Super Duck. Super Duck's great.
This is so funny. Super Duck is my friend.
Super Duck's actually my favorite. So that's perfect. Yep, you can keep doing that.
I've never said anything bad about Super Duck.
I love Super Duck. He's feeling very threatened by this duck.
He should feel threatened by that duck. You better walk that f***ing duck.
Jughead and Brad eat at Pops again. Jughead tells him how cool it was of him to threaten Werther's and Featherhead. He asks if Brad will be his mentor for real, and Brad says that he's open to it, and he also is ready to reread his novel and give it another shot. Jughead's eating a burger this scene, which is great, but they make a joke about adoption papers, and Blanche also was mad about the adoption paper joke. He has a dad already. He has a dad. Leave him be.
I'm pretty sure his dad is a criminal.
But also, like, he was like, last episode, he was like, you should write about your dad. And then we saw Jughead writing about his dad. And I'm like, where's that? I want to read that.
Yeah, where did that go?
I want to read that.
I also want to read that.
So that better come back.
I want to read Jughead's FP fan fiction.
Brad is, like, getting murdered. And Jughead's like, now I have two absent fathers.
I need at least one, please. That's how we get FP back, actually.
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
If Brad has to die for FP to come back,
RIP
Brad.
Yeah.
RIP. So Jughead narrates that now Werther's isn't up his ass, he can actually work on his writing again. He's also super excited about Brad being his new mentor and showing him all his new writing. That's great. I'm happy for him. Too bad.
It's good. It's good.
Something bad happens. So Brad is home alone reading his manuscript when there's a knock at the door. He opens it up and it's a milkman.
It's the milkman. Ethel's not insane.
With a late delivery. And that's the end of the episode. That was huge. I gasped. I really did.
It's a BFD.
It really was a milkman.
Do you think he took the inspiration from the comic?
Who? The milkman?
Yes.
Oh, like the milkman dressed up. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's like a copycat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which kind of goes against the whole, if you read things, it'll influence you to do bad things argument that everyone's arguing against. But like, whatever, I'll watch it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't put it past Riverdale to do that and just not realize that it's really tone deaf, you know? Like, they're literally, like, the point we're making is that comics are good and that the people who hate comics are the bad guys. And then they're just like, oh, oops, we accidentally made a storyline that went against exactly what we were trying to say. Whoopsie.
That's our bad, though. JK.
Classic them.
And having said that, even though we dunk on the writers all the time, we do support them getting fair wages to write
of course.
This nonsense.
Yes, exactly. If you don't write it, how am I supposed to make fun of it?
Exactly.
The only other thing is that, like, I could not stop, like, visualizing the milkman being like, sorry, I brought a late delivery. And Brad being like, no, that's okay. I didn't order any milk. Bye. And just slamming the door in his face.
Okay, but that would be amazing.
Right?
You'd be like, oh, actually, nah, I'm good today, bro. But, next week?
Yeah, but thanks. See ya.
Thanks. Slay.
Before we get into the next storyline, I want to talk to you guys about Patreon. It's a service in which you can donate to some of your favorite creators. Our Patreon is patreon.com/theafficionados. And we have several really cool tiers that you can join. So the $1 level is early access to every single podcast. $2 is our Discord server. $5 is 10% off at 3 different small businesses that are all in the description. And $10 is our Patreon-only podcast where we sort of update about what's actually happening in our lives and just like do some little fun games and stuff, and it's great. I have made it possible for you guys to get a month of the early access tier for free, so if you want to go check that out, do. That would be great. If not, check out our small businesses or recommend us to a friend, because that's free. Thanks.
Woohoo!
All right, Archie and Gay Kevin. Truly Gay Kevin this episode.
Truly Gay Kevin. I have to give Kevin a break this episode. I can't make fun of him.
Yeah, oh, we're gonna be mad at Uncle Frank instead. I'm pissed. Uncle Frank is terrible this episode.
Hey, let's not discount the terribleness of Dad Keller.
I almost hate Uncle Frank more than Dad Keller this episode. Like, Dad Keller's not good.
I cannot wait to hear your take about this.
Like, yeah, it's bad. Okay, here we go. So, Archie confides in Uncle Frank, who still has a puking emoji next to his name in all the notes, about what happened because Mary apparently won't talk to him. Respect. Uncle Frank says...
They said we could not afford...
Molly Ringwald this episode.
Molly for this episode, okay?
Yeah. Uncle Frank says extremely creepy things about Betty, but says to stay away from her.
It kills me that the thing that made Frank like Archie is the fact that Archie has it bad for Betty.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'd be more upset if you weren't into Betty because that would mean you were gay. Because obviously Betty's so hot.
I was like...
He like calls her a kitten or something. I'm just like, that's a teen!
But like, that's how they used to talk about women.
Gross!
Like, and thought it was fine.
And also, Archie is super gay.
Right?
He is super gay.
That's a bisexual man if I have ever seen one.
Truly. Truly. Yeah. It was gross. It was terrible and bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like worse because like Keller is like, I'm mad and I'm disappointed that you're gay. You know, like he's like acting really mean and bad. But like Uncle Frank, I don't want to say is worse, but it's like on par because he's just like, oh, thank God.
Yeah,
you're not like that guy, you know? Like,
thank God you're not gay, and also your teenage girlfriend is really hot.
He's literally doing locker room talk with his like teenage nephew, and like it sucks and is bad.
I mean, we're on the same page here.
Martin Cummins and Ryan Robbins, please accept a edible arrangement from me because I'm really sorry this is happening.
Yeah, I can't imagine being told you have to talk about women like that. Oh,
truly gross. Gross. Yeah. Kevin walks into his bedroom to find Tom, who has found one of his gay magazines. He tries to deflect and claims it's a bodybuilding magazine, but Tom asks if he got it from his new pal, Clay. He clearly suspects something and asks what's going on with Clay, these magazines, and he and Betty's breakup, and he says he does not approve of whatever's going on.
I mean, we knew this was coming. I do think it's a huge bummer because in, like, our canon, Dad Keller is really supportive of his son.
He's amazing.
So to take that, I mean, it's the same thing as, like, making, well, not quite, because Alice is always hit or miss in terms of morals, but it does suck to see Dad Keller end up this way.
Dad Keller's my friend.
Yeah.
And now it's like, before we were like, ACAB, even Dad Keller. And now we're like, ACAB, especially Dad Keller. And that makes me mad.
Especially Dad Keller. Yeah.
Makes me sad.
It used to cause us a moment to have to say ACAB about him. And now it's gleeful.
Yeah, exactly. So was this, for some reason, I was under the impression that it was a bodybuilding magazine. Is it not? Was it a gay magazine?
I think it's a bodybuilding magazine, but, like, it could just be, like, a gay publication that, like, hides behind that.
Right. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Which, like, gay people were so innovative, you know?
I just thought it was weird. Like, if it was just a bodybuilding magazine, I was like, Dad Keller, it's kind of weird that you think that this is gay.
Right? And you're like, how are you supposed to learn about bodybuilding then, sir?
Yeah, Kevin could have been like, I'm just learning about bodybuilding. Is that, like, is that a feminine thing to do, Dad?
Okay, exactly, because, like, he's a wrestler in the main timeline.
Yeah. So... But okay. Dad Keller is also in, like, the worst outfit ever.
It's not
because
good.
He's like a dad in the 50s, and I'm like, Martin Cummins is so handsome, and what are you doing to him? In all respect, you are being so disrespectful to my friend.
Okay, hear me out. Bad on Dad Keller, but would be hot on Tony.
Okay, yeah.
Because anything a dude wears looks way better on a lesbian.
That is true.
Or a bisexual woman.
I also, in September of 2019, we got to go to the, like, CW Stars soccer game where we, like, saw Jacob Tremblay from across the field or whatever.
Dude, I forgot we did that.
Right? And, like, Supernatural dudes, the 100 people were there, and Riverdale people were there, and so I met Jordan Connor and Drew Ray Tanner there, but Martin Cummins was also there. He didn't play, he was straight up in jeans wearing a jersey, but he's so handsome!
He's so
and
handsome.
You're ruining him!
Yeah.
This is so rude.
The unhotification of the Riverdale dads has been so sad.
The Hot Dad Squad does not deserve this. And I'm just like...
Like, if I have to watch all of these people in high school again, the least you can do is make sure that their parents stay hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he also, like... It's doing him such a disservice in every way, but, like, he also looks so out of place in there, in that outfit, because I'm just like, he's meant to be wearing hot outfits.
Yeah, he's supposed to be a DILF! Give me my DILF back!
Exactly. So, Archie watches as Tom drops Kevin off at basketball practice and then talks briefly to Uncle Frank. Uncle Frank tells the team that Kev is the newest member of the Bulldogs, and Julian calls Kevin... some sort of, like, slur or something. Like, at least he means it like a slur if it wasn't a slur. You know what I mean?
Oh, hundo.
Truly, everybody is so confident about Kevin's sexuality, and it really sucks because it really feels like he was, like, I don't know, passing okay up until he broke up with Betty. You know what I mean? Like, no one had any idea, except for Clay, maybe Tony, before then, you know? So it's just, like, interesting that as soon as he starts hanging out with Clay, now everyone's, like, so convinced he's gay.
Which, like, does that mean that everyone knows that Clay is gay as well, or...
Well, when Clay...
Is it just, like, when you're too close to your dude friends?
When Clay told Kevin, I think, if I remember correctly, he said, like, I trust you to be discreet about this, you know? Yeah. So it's like, I don't know.
I guess we'll find out.
I don't know. I just hate Julian. And it's nice that Archie's proving that he can do more than shoot one basket one time. I did appreciate that.
I told you. I told you my boy had talent. You leave him alone!
And my other thing, oh, Archie is the best, like, I wrote this in my notes later, but, like, I know that we did that whole thing where we did, like, that bracket of who the best Riverdale character is, you might remember.
Oh, here's the thing, it's Archie now.
And we said it was Cheryl, but it's not, it's Archie.
It's, okay, Cheryl is the best in terms of sheer camp entertainment, and I will never deny that because the things that Mads does with her is just so funny.
Yeah.
But
the Good Person Award.
The Good Person Award and just the Great Guy Award goes to Archie. He's just such a good kid.
We hated Archie for 3 full seasons, and I cannot even remember, like, I feel like I'm gonna rewatch those seasons after this whole thing is over, and I'm gonna be like, yeah, he's annoying, but I love him because that's my baby. You know what I mean?
100%.
Like, I'm gonna go back and watch the times when I thought Archie was annoying and not find him annoying anymore because he's so incredible.
I mean, I think that's definitely going to happen, but I also want to say, in our defense, the romance storylines that they kept shoving him in were very frustrating.
Yeah, and he was always making dumbass decisions.
Like,
but that's just because he's a dumbass.
Like, he was not good with Josie, and, like, I think that's one of the reasons we didn't like him is because of the way he treated Josie.
You know what? Actually, I don't think he was too bad with Josie. I think it was Val that we didn't care for him with.
Oh, with Val! That's right!
Yeah, I didn't mind him with Josie because he was already...
Oh, man, how many pussycats did he date?
Those two.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think he was good Archie by the time that he dated Josie. If not, he was, like, becoming good Archie, okay. I think, at that point.
I will give our boy a pass, but he was on thin ice.
Yeah, it was not good in the early seasons. And I know KJ is, like, kind of insane, but if I ever met KJ, I would burst into tears.
KJ is insane. He, like, hates fat people. Like, he is. But at the same time, as a fat person, I can say he's doing a good job.
He's doing such a good job.
Also, people... Here's the thing. If someone says something that's kind of sketchy, but, like, ultimately is something you could grow out of, aka making fat jokes, I will make sure that they never forget that they said that. But at the same time, you can grow out of that crap.
Yeah. You just need to prove it, babe.
I just hope that he has, because I think it is extremely funny that we are frequently in the same city as this man, and there's always a threat that he is running around shirtless. Yeah. Doing the most insane crap.
I just think that how can you be a fatphobic person when you're such close friends with Lily Reinhart? I feel like Lily Reinhart saw that and, like, slapped him across the face and he's better now. You know, she has a magic touch.
I like that we're just, like, making up this narrative so that we can excuse the crap that KJ's done. There's, like, we are problematic right now. I want us to acknowledge it.
Yeah, I don't want to kiss KJ on the forehead, but I do want to kiss Archie on the forehead, you know?
Oh, yeah, Archie deserves a little forehead.
And if I have to be parasocial about it, if I have to be delusional, and I get the chance to kiss KJ on the forehead, I'm gonna pretend it's Archie.
Fair enough.
You know?
Like, don't do that, though.
I won't, but, like, if I had the chance, and it was consensual.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. You're such a special person.
Anyway, only other thing that I wanted to say about the scene was that I love Kevin's jacket, and I need it. That's my jacket now, and I want it so bad.
Are you gonna, like, take it off of him?
If I could. Hey, okay. You're the one who's in Vancouver. Can you find it?
Yeah, I got it.
Thanks.
I got you.
Uncle Frank walks into the garage while Archie is working on his bike, and Blanche wants to remind us that it is his bicycle because Uncle Frank stole Archie's car. Archie asks what he was talking about with Tom at basketball practice, and he explains that Kevin is confused and that he needs to be straightened out.
Straightened out.
Sucks. My only note was just that Frank is such a bummer. This is a bummer and it's sad. And Blanche said, of course Uncle Frank is homophobic. I've got bad news for you, bitch, because both of the people you're currently living with are bisexual.
Oh my god, wait, yeah, Mary is canonically into women.
Canonically. Yes, literally.
Oh, it sucks having to, like, experience all of these storylines. Like, I do think this episode dealt with them, like, the most respectfully.
Yeah.
But it sucks having to see all of this considering where we are right now as a society. I'm just like, I understand that we need episodes like this to be very special episodes about how homophobia is wrong, but at this point I don't think anyone cares if you're homophobic. They're just gonna stay homophobic. I don't know how to get through to those people anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So the next day at school, Archie approaches Kevin and Clay and asks Kev if he wants to shoot baskets with him during lunch, and Clay, like, silently comforts Kevin after Archie leaves.
He's like, I know.
I just want to say Archie is, like, the sweetest person ever.
I know you don't want to play basketball, you fruit. It's okay.
It's like, but here, I'm trying to help. You know, it's like, it sucks because Archie isn't, like, necessarily like, Kevin needs to be straightened out. Although, I feel like he almost sort of just believes the adults in his life, you know, for a little bit there until after he goes and, like, finds Kevin back with Twyla. But also,
I think he also doesn't know what it means by straightened out. I don't think he knows what any of this means yet.
Yeah, and then also, Archie sort of is just like, I just want to include people because he knows that Kevin is having a hard time with his family and he just wants Kevin to, like, feel better. So he's not even necessarily like, let me help straighten him out. He's like, let me just help make him feel better because I know that he's having a rough time at home and I don't want him to have a rough time at school.
Yeah, too. He's being a good person and helping Kevin assimilate in a way that makes him stick out less.
Yeah. At lunch, Archie asks Kevin why he joined the basketball team. Kevin says his dad made him so he'd be more of a regular guy, a guy who isn't interested in poetry, drama, music, and movie stars. Archie says that he likes those things too. And Kevin can tell that he isn't getting it and just says yes, but Archie's a normal guy and he wants to be one too, so they go back to playing basketball.
It's very sweet.
Archie just doesn't get it. And that was so sweet where Archie was like, well, I like those things and that's not weird. Everybody likes those things, you know?
And it's like, Archie, it's because your straight Sona is the most believable.
It's true. I'm just like, no one sees how gay Archie is but me. No one understands gay Archie. Where's Mad Dog? Where is he?
The chemistry that they had was undeniable. And I will...
Incredible!
I will never refute that for the rest of my life. Like, Archie should be bisexual.
Truly. Like, Kevin kissed him, like, in the, I don't know, it's like the Hedwig episode or something. And Archie, like, seemed like he didn't hate it. I'm just saying.
It's because KJ is fine with stuff like that.
Yeah. I watched this episode with my friend Meta again. She came over to watch it with me. And we were laughing because Archie's just like, Kevin, we've been in the same grade together for, like, our whole time in school. And Meta was like, that's how age works.
It sure is.
Do you mean class? Do you mean you were in the same class together? Of course you were in the same grade.
Listen, he's stupid, okay? Give him a break.
It's true, it's true.
Would you let my little fool just try and make friends in the most awkward way possible?
In the boys' locker room, Julian praises one of the Bulldogs for having sex with a girl. He says between him and Archie's peep show, they should rename the team the Horn Dogs.
Stupid.
Blanche said, if I have to hear it, so does everyone listening to this podcast. Which is fair. He asks who's next and singles out Kevin. Archie defends him and asks if Julian's still a virgin, and Julian says absolutely not because on his 16th birthday, his dad took him to see Twyla Twist, who's a sex worker in this timeline, and he suggests that Kevin should go see her, and Kevin agrees that he should.
So fascinating. This is like,
hate Julian.
This is fascinating because this once again touches on the, honestly, the timeless topic of sex work, which is it's okay when men do all of these things, but when women do them, they're sluts. But if you go to a sex worker, that's a real woman, but also she's getting paid. And it's like this whole morality tornado that I think they did a pretty good job, like, not slut shaming anyone here.
Yeah.
Which I was impressed with, but these things are only okay when the men have sex. If the women have sex, they're harlots like Betty.
Which, honestly, we see that double standard in the Betty storyline. So, yes, like, you know, they're aware of it.
They definitely make us aware of it, and they make us know that they know it without it being very heavy-handed. I think that's why I like this episode so much. It's just not clunky.
Yeah. I did like the part where Julian was like, well, maybe it's your turn, Kevin. And Archie's like, what about you, Julian? What about you?
You virgin?
And I was like, yeah, so true. So true.
So true, King.
He talked, Julian talked about this kid's, like, Thunderbird or his dad's Thunderbird or something. That sounds familiar to me. Was Archie's car in the original timeline, like, a Thunderbird or something? I feel like they've talked about Thunderbirds.
I mean, it's crazy? A really classic car, dude.
Yeah, I'm just like,
I believe it's a Ford Thunderbird.
I feel like we've talked about Thunderbirds on one of our podcasts before, and it must have been this one. I don't know. 1 minute. Just sounds familiar to me.
1 minute.
Okay.
Searching Thunderbird Riverdale just, in fact, shows me Thunderbirds for sale in places called Riverdale.
Oh, where is that?
Wait, 1966 Ford Thunderbird in Riverdale. Oh my god, it's an entire... this is an entire forum of classic car enthusiasts. Taking screenshots of when Thunderbirds were used in Riverdale.
Yes!
One of them is outside Pops. It's a literal screen cap of a Thunderbird parked outside Pops. And the fucking Canada rail is in the background with Canada very clearly visible.
I feel like, because right now I'm looking at this other one that is like Cheryl and Jason's car. But I also, I'm realizing that isn't that the car that like Hiram gave to Archie when Archie was going to like protect Veronica or whatever. And then like his dad, and then Fred was upset because like they were going to fix up a jalopy. And then instead Archie was driving the Thunderbird instead.
That's possible. I'm trying to look on the Riverdale wiki right now, but I'm actually not.
The Riverdale wiki is okay. It is not as good as the Lost wiki, which is the best wiki of all time. So.
When I was in film school, we actually were, wikis were, like, just starting to become, like, something that people were really using, because, like, of course this was 2009, because I'm ancient. Mm-hmm. The two examples of the best wikis of all time that we were shown as, like, potential screenwriters were Lost and Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Which, like, because they're entirely fan-maintained, and of course now they've been corporatized and they're owned by whatever the fandom is, but...
Yeah.
I would say these days, Memory Alpha is probably the best one that currently exists and is updated.
Mm-hmm. I did think that Fangs was, like, really classy about it, though, you know? Like, he was like, I'm not gonna kiss and tell. Like, he was like, what about you and Midge? And Fangs is like, none of your business. I mean, we know that Midge is, like, fully knocked up, so, like, clearly.
Also, there's nothing in the wiki about the fourth Thunderbird.
All right, I have a memory that...
It might be that Julian drives one.
...created itself. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Julian drives one.
Okay. That must be it. So, Julian went to see a prostitute at 16... Which is not legal.
Again, toxic male culture is a
like
hell of
Clifford
a
taking
drug.
Him to do that, and Clifford paying for that is like
that's wrong. That's horrible. Deeply, deeply messed up.
I know that stuff that happened. I know that happened.
Oh, of course it was because you weren't a real man,
you know. But it's still hard to hear about.
Yeah, you had to prove that one, you were a real man, and two, that you weren't gay, and that's crazy to me.
But what do you think? Because later it's revealed that Keller told Julian to bring it up to get Kevin to do it.
That's even more messed up to me.
Which is even more messed up for sure. But does that mean that did this even happen to Julian? Did he even do that?
Yeah, I would say so. I think that Keller probably knew about it because of like Julian's dad.
But I also think that Julian's not considering the fact that people could be like, you had to go see a prostitute to get someone to sleep with you.
Yeah, but they're not thinking
like,
that.
That's not... No, I know, but like...
They're thinking that it's cool.
Right, but like, if Julian thought about it, and if anybody thought about it for 3 seconds, they'd be like, wait, Julian, aren't you like so super cool? Why aren't all of these other 16-year-old girls wanting to sleep with you?
I mean, having a brain is extremely good in my mind. Couldn't tell you if any of these boys have them.
I wonder if it was like an experience thing too. You know, like, Twilight Twist has more experience, so that's why it's better to go there or something like that.
You could be onto something there.
Like, I feel like maybe that's why it's not embarrassing, is because, like, I slept with this really experienced person and now I know what I'm doing or something like that.
Yeah, like a woman of the night.
I don't know, and actually, I don't want to think about it anymore.
But, respect to Twilight Twist.
Mm-hmm. We support and respect sex workers.
100%.
Kevin and Archie talk about what'll happen with Twyla. Archie reveals that he's actually a virgin too, and Kevin is angry at the double standard that Archie doesn't have to go to Twyla, even though they're both virgins.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite part was Kevin going, if I'm a virgin, and you're a virgin, then who's driving the car?
Who's driving this jalopy?
Then who's in charge here? But I think the reason why Archie's not going is because everyone thinks he did it already. That's why. Not because everyone thinks Archie's straight. It's because they think that it's done already.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Kevin and Twyla are in a motel room. Twyla is incredibly creepy and makes visibly uncomfortable Kevin dance with her. Who paid for this? Dad Keller?
Dad Keller, for sure.
In Kevin's mind, who paid for this? Julian?
Oh my god, yeah. hey, great question.
Kevin's like, thanks for paying for this? Like, what? I don't know. Anyway, I like had a hope that didn't come true, and I should have known because Twyla is... I guess I just, like, think of sex workers as good people, but I know that Twyla Twist is a bad person, canonically, mm-hmm. so I guess that was silly of me, but I honestly sort of thought that, like, she would just, like, give him nice advice, you know? Because later she says, like, I get it, and I've been around the block before, or whatever, with blockheads just like you.
If she had lied, yeah. The consequences for her would have been very high.
Yeah, like, at that point, it was my first time watching, so I did not know that it was Dad Keller who had, like, made... whatever and stuff, but like I sort of expected her to like sit on the bed with him and be like, it's okay, and I thought that would have been nice, but no,
she's a businesswoman, she doesn't have time for nonsense. Yeah.
She's just like, I guess, like, you know, it is creepy that she's like dancing with him when he's not into it and stuff, but honestly, Brittany, I feel like a lot of these nights that she has with teens maybe start out like that, you know what I mean?
Oh no, they definitely do. Like, she's definitely learned how to do those things. And the fact that, like, when I say, you know, respect to sex workers, let's be clear that the underage part is the part I absolutely object to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Blanche said, how old is she? Too old for them. Kevin and Julian are literal high schoolers, and this whole plot made me so uncomfortable. Totally fair. I completely agree.
I completely agree. And I think the fascinating thing is that I think it is reflective of stuff that happened then. So, like, it's hard to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Betty picks up some dinner at Pop's and runs into Archie. He asks how Kevin was when they were dating. Betty is confused and doesn't want to kiss and tell. He explains that his dad thinks he's funny and a little girly, but after tonight, he'll hopefully straighten out. Betty obviously knows Kevin's gay, and she demands to know what's going on tonight. Archie's like, Betty, can I ask you a question? And she's, like, still, like, 10 feet away from him. And I'm like, this seems private. Maybe get a little closer. You know, like...
they can't get closer to each other. Like, they're so scared of being anywhere near each other now.
That's true. That's true. But Archie, of course, is, like, such a bad liar that he's just like, ah, crap, I shouldn't have even asked. But, of course, it's good that he did so that he could go and save Kevin. My favorite part of this scene that I, like, had to go back and watch, like, 2 or 3 times because it made me laugh so much. Okay. Betty walks in. She walks into Pops with her little purse. Okay. Yeah. She opens the purse and she puts her hand in and she just goes, here's a bunch of loose bills that were in my purse.
American money, man.
It made me laugh so much. I'm like, those aren't in like a wallet or something. No, it was just a bunch of crushed up bills, loose bills that she just hands to the person, and made me laugh so much. I thought that was so funny.
Didn't have a budget for a wallet, purse only.
Yeah. So Archie bursts into the motel room where Kevin is crying on the bed. Twyla angrily explains that nothing happened and Kevin just started crying that he couldn't do it. She asks if Archie wants to have sex instead, but he says he's just here for his friend. And Twyla thinks they're a couple and says to take him home, and they leave.
Thanks, Twyla. Terrible. Thanks so much, babe. Horrible.
She's like, if I'm getting paid, I might as well do so. Like, what? Like, are you just gonna sleep with Archie for free? Like, what's happening?
I'm like, I guess she's already gotten paid, so she's like, well, I might as well. And I'm like, they are children.
How awkward is it that, like, how long was he just sitting there and crying? I can't imagine just sitting there in a room where he was just crying.
Oh, it was a while.
Yeah. And she's just sitting there, like, smoking a cigarette, just watching him cry. Like, ugh, 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 terrible.
It's a sad storyline.
It's really sad. Yeah. And she also thinks that Kevin is dating Archie, which is like...
I'd watch that.
Hello? Even Twyla can tell that Archie's bi.
I would watch that.
Guys, I've been saying it.
There's like... okay, so there was this scene in Ted Lasso this week where they're trying to figure out... they realize that one of the boys on the team is gay. And
yes, I have seen stuff about that, even though I'm only in season 2. But yes, I know who we're talking about.
All of them look around the room, and they're, like, looking around, and everybody looks at Jamie Tart. And he's like, I'm flattered. That's Archie. He's like, listen, I'm not, but I'm flattered. And I'm like, but thanks you so are because you're that. Bisexual.
Yeah, deeply, deeply.
Yeah.
Blanche said about this scene, she is so creepy. Why is she so mad that she's not having sex with a high schooler? And also, why does she keep talking in third person? This is why Penny Peabody was a way cooler leader of the Ghoulies.
I mean, correct.
I miss Penny Peabody. Yeah.
I also miss Penny Peabody. I think she was talking in third person to be edgy,
That's my theory.
Oh, yeah. She's just like, it's sexy to talk in third person. I'm like, is it? Okay.
I'm like, okay. All right, weirdo. You have sex with children.
If you say so.
Money. You can have sex with adults for money, and I do not care. In fact, I
say. Yeah, but this part, no.
Support you. Not this one, though.
No. Kevin asks Archie why he came to get him. Archie tells him he ran into Betty and told her what was going on, and she was furious and said that he had to come save him. Kevin is worried about what the Bulldogs will think and that he'll never be normal. Archie says that they'll just tell him that he did sleep with Twyla. He'll even give him some things to say from magazines, or that he's heard Uncle Frank say!
Yeah.
And Kevin agrees. I'm just like, does Uncle Frank talk about that a lot in front of you? Uncle Frank, what is going on?
I mean, it's very much a holdover from, like, that culture of time.
Yeah.
Like, men were just allowed to speak about women in that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, like, this makes sense because Archie has a lot of experience in pretending that he did stuff that he didn't do, you know?
I mean...
It's like, this is the second time...
He's like, I've been...
...that everybody has a... thought that it happened and it didn't.
I've been a beard. I've been a beard. I can do it, babe.
I'm like waiting for Archie to, like, if they give Archie the, like, this whole revelation in the 50s, I will laugh so hard and I will be so thrilled.
So, like, for those of you that don't know, because I feel like this is something Robin and I have talked about in the past, but so the reason that Riverdale exists
yeah,
is because Roberto, who is the showrunner of the show, created the show.
Yeah, we call him Ras sometimes.
Yeah, we'll just call him Ras. He originally wrote a stage play where everybody was gay, and the main, like, crux...
Because Roberto is gay.
Yes, because Roberto is gay. And the main crux of it is that Jughead and Archie are in love, and they've been in love the entire time. So when we're talking about, like, queer Archie and, like, all of these things, it's because, like, Roberto, the guy who runs the show, his original vision for, like, updated Riverdale was Archie and Jughead in love.
Yeah. And, like, also, Archie has insane chemistry with, like, several men on this show.
Yeah.
My number one is Mad Dog in season 3. It was insane. And, like, the beginning of season 4.
No, their chemistry was,
you guys,
bonkers.
Oh my god. Literally, if you search up, like, Archie Mad Dog Riverdale, like, there, some of those gifs, like,
it was real.
Whoa. You know?
And so, like, anyway. I think that's, like, that's definitely down to, like, KJ, like, having good chemistry with people. I wish that he had better chemistry with Cole.
Yeah.
Because I think that was, like, kind of, like, Roberto wanting to, like, maybe? But, like, that's not gonna happen because KJ and Cole do not have, they barely have friend chemistry.
I've never seen Cole have chemistry with a man.
I also have not seen that.
Like, he's, like, straight derogatory.
Yeah. He, the person with the most chemistry that I've seen him have is legit Tabitha.
Yeah. Which, honestly, bodes well for Ace Jughead for me, you know? So, like, I'm not mad about it, but you'd think that if Roberto really wanted it to be an Archie Jughead thing, he would have cast characters that already had, or, like, actors that already had chemistry like that, you know? Yeah.
But, like, so that's where our insane headcanons come from, is the literal, like, original interpretation of the person who created the show.
Blanche also said, like, that Uncle Frank is the worst. Shut up, Uncle Frank. And from the way that Uncle Frank talks about women, Blanche can tell that he doesn't sleep with any women.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not getting laid.
No. So Kevin comes home. Ugh, this is very sad. Kevin comes home and Tom is waiting for him. He tells him he knows everything that happened with Twyla and that he was the one who told Julian to suggest it to him. He says he also talked to Twyla and she said that he cried and couldn't sleep with her, and Tom gets up and leaves the room. Blanche said about this scene, and such good point. She said, Tom is genuinely so scary in this plotline, and I completely agreed.
I was genuinely afraid that violence was about to happen.
Me too.
Yeah.
And Blanche said, I literally flinched every time he was on screen. It's so heartbreaking to me that they took this character that we loved and trusted and that loved and accepted Kevin and made him this terrible. Yeah. I completely agree. Like, genuinely, I thought that he was gonna pull a Brad Rayberry and, like, finish drinking his drink and, like, smash it on the ground. Like, I really thought he was gonna get violent.
I completely agree. I genuinely think we might actually still be headed for that.
Yeah.
And I am concerned.
Yeah.
Because I think that there is a limit to what you should be showing this age of audience. Not because I don't think they can handle it, but because we already live in a time where they already know.
Yeah.
Like, they know it's bad. They know it's scary. We don't need these things. I'm hoping that they don't do it.
but the implication alone was very clear, and the acting was wonderful in that you were supposed to feel that fear.
Yeah. I think that, like, it's interesting. There are still people today who are like, well, I don't care if this person is gay, as long as it's not my family or my son. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, Frank is like, phew, thank goodness it's not you, you know? But Tom sees it, at least this version of Tom, sees it as, like, a knock on his own masculinity, that his seed created this girly thing, you know?
Well, to this day, that's what a lot of men think.
Yeah.
They do see it as a knock on their masculinity, a knock on their parenting, that if they had only been harder on their kids, they wouldn't have wound up gay, which, of course, one, is just complete bullshit, and two, the harder you are on your kids on this subject, the more you try to brainwash them in the opposite direction, the more they're going to go the complete opposite way from what you want, because one, you've created a rebel, and two, you've created an unsafe environment.
Yeah. Hard to watch.
Yeah.
Archie is minding his own business, eating his breakfast, when the stink bug, aka Uncle Frank, shows up. He says he just spoke with Tom about what happened with Kevin, so now Tom is also, like, spreading it around, and that he's quitting the basketball team. He says poor Tom, because it's such a shame he has a gay kid. Archie says he lost his appetite and leaves the room. Archie's literally like, you disgust me, I can't eat my cereal anymore, and I can't even eat it later because it's gonna be soggy, so I'm wasting the cereal because you suck so much.
What about my breakfast?
I love to see everybody, like, drinking milk, because everyone loves milk on this show. It's, like, for some reason, this, like, theme that continues on, that people drink milk.
Bro, it's because it was a 50s thing from the f***ing rallying of the dairy farmers.
No, yeah, but, like, then why did they drink so much milk in the original timeline? Like, Kevin, Chick, like, and it was always gay characters who were drinking milk. I'm just saying.
Oh my god, I totally forgot about that.
Kevin used to drink milk constantly.
It's because the sign of drinking milk is, insanity. She says to someone who regularly still drinks milk.
Oopsie, I buy a 4 liter of milk every single week.
She does. Bitch loves milk. Like, I love milk. Milk does not love me.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
The three beverages I drink, period, water, iced tea, milk.
You are.
Period.
That is a TikTok.
Yeah.
In itself, because there's just going to be so many people who reply and go, sorry, what?
That's it. That's it.
You like drink a glass of milk like a psychopath?
Now that we have done something lighthearted, let me ask you a question that I feel like is a little less lighthearted.
Okay.
I find it so annoying because we love the parents so much. Like, the parents are the bad guys now.
Yeah.
But, like, the parent characters mean a lot to us. And so it sort of is strange to me that these kids, who are our heroes of this show, are seen as, like, these good guys who are like, it's okay that you're gay, Kevin. Mm-hmm. And the parents are like, it's terrible that you're gay. I feel like, realistically, in this era, even the teens would also feel this way. Like, at the time, like, these kids are boomers, right?
No, this is brilliant. Because the point of this is to show that hate is learned. Like, hate is not intrinsic to us as people. We are not born being prejudiced against another person. It is always taught. So having these kids essentially represent Gen Z, and having the parents represent literal boomers, is the perfect communication of, you choose hate. You know, it's not something, hate is something that is taught to you. It is essentially brainwashed into you. You are not meant to treat others as, like, aliens to you. Like, you're not supposed to be other. You're supposed to love and accept them for who they are, especially queer people or people of color, you know, by POC. Like, you're not supposed to hate people. So, like, it's a good sort of representation of, you don't have to carry on the hatred of your parents.
Yeah, that's true. Archie approaches Kevin and Clay and asks what they're doing for lunch. Kevin apologizes and says he's not playing basketball anymore. Archie says that he was actually hoping just to hang out so they could talk about music and movie stars and other stuff that they like. And they say sure, and Archie is really excited about that.
It's very sweet.
Archie's just an ally. He's just a really good person.
He really... Say ally, Valentina.
And Archie said ally.
Ally!
Brittany, tell me what you texted me about. Tell me the thing that you texted me.
Okay, here's the thing. The world's weird right now, but I did in fact text you and say, I know I have my period because Archie being an ally made me cry.
It it's because he's so sweet. And also, another thing that I noticed is that Casey, who is playing Kevin, he's got the sad face on, like the and it's like understated too. It's just like very solemn.
Yeah.
And it's really well done.
Yeah, it is.
He's like, something really private is happening in my home and it's really upsetting, but I don't want to bring it to school. And like, that's what he's got it on his face. And he's doing a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. Lovely. Any final thoughts on that one, or would you like to just move on to Betty?
Yeah, if you ever tell anyone that I cried at Riverdale, I will kill you.
I've absolutely cried at Riverdale before.
Yes, but Go ahead,
spread it around. All right, so our episode begins with Jughead narrating about Betty. He says that Hal told Alice about what happened between Betty and Archie.
Snitch.
We still haven't gotten an explanation as to how Hal and Frank went in there at the exact same time, but...
Bro, we're never gonna get it.
I'm just saying. She is not pleased, Alice that is, and calls Hiram and Hermione to tell them that Veronica encouraged Betty and gave her lingerie. She also calls Penelope to vent about the whole ordeal, and Penelope tells everyone she's ever met.
I think it's so funny that Penelope was like, oh, this is some fresh gossip. Let's go.
Yeah, everyone needs to know.
Yeah.
And Alice doesn't even say, like, how does everyone know about this? Like, she's just like, well, whatever. How do you think Alice has Hermione's number? Like, I know that they knew each other, but Hermione's like a celebrity now. Do you think she has the same number? How did she get a hold of her?
I don't know. Great question. We will never get the answer.
And then I just wanted to give a shout out to Nat Bolt. She really do be having a good time, and I love that for her.
And I will never shut up about the fact that we saw her in person once, and she was so beautiful, it took my breath away.
At a drag show, yeah.
We were at a drag show. Nat Bolt was at the drag show. She is so pretty. You guys have no idea.
So true. Alice reprimands Betty for the Archie incident. Betty says it's not a big deal since they were in separate houses. Alice decides, as punishment, Betty is going to join Riverdale Grandstand, the after-school dance show that meets for 3 hours every day, and she's also not allowed to talk to Archie anymore. Betty is not a fan of this idea, but doesn't really have a choice.
I also would not be a fan of this idea. 3 hours?
Right. 3 hours every day? I hardly have enough time as it is.
Of my time? Exactly.
Yeah. And like, I love that they're polishing silverware while they're doing this too. They're like, what can we have them do during this scene?
What's Betty's punishment? And as someone who had to polish silverware as a punishment, it sucks. That stuff smells awful.
Yeah. Betty said that only nerds and squares are on the dance show. And I just think it's funny because Cheryl's like the dance captain. And she's like, yeah, nerds and squares.
Yeah, nerds, squares, and lesbians. It's fine.
Respect. Betty walks into class, and everyone, having heard about the peep show, starts whispering and acting inappropriate. Archie walks in a few minutes after her, and they all start clapping and cheering. Betty and Archie are both super uncomfortable. Yeah, the double standard is extra double with this one.
Yeah,
not so good. I was like, how did everyone hear about it? Penelope, I guess.
Oh.
Penelope told three people, and it became the top. Penelope was the top of a pyramid, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
100%.
Yeah. So in the locker room, Veronica asks Betty how far she and Archie went. She says they just looked at each other. She's like, it literally was impossible for us to do anything, actually.
I mean, it's embarrassing how, like, they didn't even get to have the fun part.
Yeah, and she's like, now we won't even get to do that, since now I have to be on Riverdale Grandstand every day. Veronica says she hates television, but it could be fun, which tracks with Veronica and the other storyline.
Yep.
Hearing this, Cheryl walks in and reveals she's a dance captain on the show, and she takes this job very seriously.
Of course she does.
To her disapproval, Betty asks Veronica to join too, but Veronica declines because of her new job at the Babylonium. Cheryl gives Betty a list of the show rules, which include no chewing gum, dress code, no kissing, and no groin-on-groin contact.
I'm like, Cheryl, I know who you want to do groin-on-groin contact with.
How does Cheryl have time for this? Like I said, like, Betty probably doesn't have time for this. I wouldn't have time for this. She, like, is the leader of the River Vixens. Like, we just saw her after school with the River Vixens last episode.
This girl, she does not sleep.
But she is supposed to go to this every day.
She does not sleep.
I'm just like, but aren't the River Vixens and the Grandstand happening at the same time? How is this happening?
She's
It's Riverdale.
Yeah, it's Riverdale.
It's Riverdale. During her first airing of Riverdale Grandstand, Betty is not having fun. Cheryl asks her why she's not dancing, and she says she doesn't want to be there, and besides, everyone is already paired up. Cheryl says she has to dance for the ratings, and also you can go dance with Dilton, who doesn't have a partner.
Okay.
This was so cute though. Dilton was so sweet, and apparently Ethel used to be his partner, but now she's at the sisters. I think we were robbed of seeing Betty and Dilton dance.
I'm so sorry.
That would have been really cute. I'm really sad about that.
I'm so sorry. Oh, are you Canadian by any chance?
What did I say?
A boat.
Did you say sorry?
Maybe.
Sorry, y'all. And then I also thought it was funny that Alice was clapping with no clap sounds.
Right?
Like, she's like, you can't see me right now, so I don't know why I was doing a rendition. myself.
I was just happy to see Machen.
Yeah.
Alice sucks, but Machen, always a delight.
Right. And speaking of, Blanche says, I wish Hal a very go away, but Alice is so cute in this scene and all the rest of the dancing scenes.
Exactly. Now we just need Alice to have, like, I don't know, a torrid affair with a serpent. A certain...
That'd be great.
A certain, maybe, leader of the serpents? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there.
I don't know. Anybody. Okay, I have another question.
Okay.
So, when you watch Hairspray and you see the Corny Collins show...
T.
You know, they introduce everybody.
Uh-huh.
And also, the Riverdale Grandstand looks exactly like the Corny Collins show. It's very funny.
Yes, it does. It's very funny.
But, like, they introduce everybody and they do their little dances and stuff. This feels like it... And maybe we missed the introductions or something, but I'm like, who's watching this? What story... Like, there's no story. There's no... Like, it's just a bunch of teens dancing. What's happening, though? What am I watching on my TV? I don't get it.
Maybe kids?
Maybe? I don't know. I didn't get it. I was like, why?
Who's the audience for this?
Who's the audience? I don't get it. What's the word? Starts with D?
I do not know.
D, and it means the-
Demographic.
Demographic. What's the demographic? Explain.
Retirees, children. Oh my god, the same demographic as the CW.
Oh, that's it.
Oh, we did it.
The Blossoms film their own commercial on Riverdale Grandstand. Penelope, Cheryl, and Julian are advertising maple syrup. I'm so obsessed. I loved it.
Same.
They were all wearing red, even though it's black and white, and it was amazing.
It's because red shows up the best in black and white. It makes the colors look the darkest.
Yeah, but it's so funny, like, Cheryl was so dead-eyed, like, almost the entire time. Like, Mads does such a good job, because I've seen her, like, Mads is not dead-eyed. Like, she put those on, so it was really great.
Oh, hundo.
And you also have to watch it 3 times to watch each one of them, because it's so cute, and they all do such a good job. It's so funny. It's a great commercial.
It's very cute.
I loved it. Once the Blossoms are finished with their commercial, another song starts playing. New character Troy asks Betty to dance because his usual partner is out with the mumps. She agrees, but during a slow dance, he starts getting gross. He says everyone's heard the peep show story and asks if she'll give him one too. Betty slaps him and Alice yells at her. At the Pembroke, Veronica and Clay are watching this on TV and they totally approve of the slap. Because Veronica and Clay are great. I feel bad for Dilton. Dilton was sad. His partner got taken. But I was like, but Dilton, why weren't you up there dancing then, buddy?
Oh yeah, good question.
She was gonna get taken by somebody if you were just sitting like 10 feet away from her, you know?
What if you just went for it?
Just go for it, Dilton. I don't know.
He's nervous.
So this new character's name is Troy.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, Troy, why are you so sensual? And then it's because like he's like super into her and wants to like do stuff.
Yeah, because he's a creep.
But at first I was like, what? Why are you talking to her like that? I literally 2 episodes ago was like, you guys don't understand. Get your head in the game. You don't get it. Troy Bolton would hate you, Julian. Like, this is horrible. And now I'm like, more Troy Bolton slander.
I'm so sorry.
He does not deserve this.
I'm so sorry.
This is literally heinous.
I'm sorry this happened to you.
How dare you do this to him? And then lastly, I just wanted to say that I love that Clay is like hanging out at Veronica's house now. I love their friendship.
They're gonna be besties.
They're so cute.
I also think they're cute.
So Betty, having slapped a man on TV, Alice is mad. Alice is mad at Betty and yells at her once they get home. She blames Betty for Troy coming on to her. Alice says that she's gonna talk to all the boys and tell them not to dance with Betty, and she can just sit in the corner and brood. If I was Betty, I'd be like, perfect.
Great, that's...
I don't want to dance with anybody.
What I wanted.
Wonderful. Can I bring a book? Like...
Yeah, like, do you mind?
Or my homework or something? Right? You know? Because obviously I don't have any time to do my homework now. You're making me do this.
Exactly!
I literally was like, oh no, Alice is victim blaming. This sucks. And then Blanche was like, no, Alice, don't victim blame. You're so sexy.
No, every time she makes like a bad decision, I'm like, oh, you could be so much better than this because you're so attractive. Yeah. But yeah. Alas.
Victim blaming, not the thing. But also she's like, I'm going to tell all the boys not to dance with you. And I was like, oh my gosh. But then Betty's going to get there and Dilton will dance with her. But that was like the end of the Dilton thing.
It was also like Betty was like,
the Dilton thing's over.
Great. I didn't want to dance anyway. So
yeah, I just thought there was going to be more Dilton content, but they really like set it up because we saw Dilton like twice and I was like, where's the third time we're gonna see Dilton? And it was gonna like a big thing, but like it just sort of petered off. So whatever.
I'm sorry that happened to you.
I just like, I love a little awkward nerd, you know.
I'm shocked that you would love that.
Yeah, it's great. So Archie tells Betty that he feels really bad about the Kevin situation. She says that he shouldn't because he did his best to protect him and make him feel included. Enter Cheryl, who hands them both invites to today's taping of Riverdale Grandstand. She says everyone is invited because it's the 50th episode, and then leaves. Betty and Archie are very angry that the adults in their lives just tell them what to do and act like nothing is wrong with the world. Betty says they might not be able to control everything.
But they can control some things.
Some things. Betty's back wearing an embroidered shirt. so everyone knows who she is.
Good.
And I'm like, also, aren't you, like, not supposed to talk to Archie?
Yeah, get where out. Their parents can see.
Yeah. That's all I had for this scene, honestly. All
right, yeah.
It's just sort of a set it up. And now we're going to knock him down. So on Riverdale Grandstand, everyone is dancing and having a good time, except for Betty, who's glaring at her parents from the audience.
Good for her.
The kid next to her is dressed like young Sheldon. Good point.
Okay, literally, good though.
Dude, and then the girl who was sitting next to young Sheldon had the worst wig I've ever seen in my life.
There were a lot of wig fails here.
It literally looked like the girl who was supposed to come and be an extra, like, accidentally cut her hair into, like, a pixie cut or something the day before, and they gave her one of Veronica's extra wigs. Like, that's what it looked like.
Yeah. It's not good.
Yeah. Hal announces that it's time for the twirl, and all the girls start twirling their dresses. Betty stands up and says she'll show everyone what a real twirl is. She twirls around and flashes everyone. Alice is horrified and everyone else is shook. So I was right.
Yes, you were.
I was kind of right. I kind of expected it to be like the lingerie that Veronica gave her and for her to like sort of just grab the bottom of her skirt and lift. But I feel like I win. I feel like I did it.
And red is also like such an evocative color.
Yeah, exactly. So her undies on full display. I thought it was really cute and like Lily was so cute in that scene. And then they like Alice goes, cut to commercial. And we see like the like commercial thing come on. And then they actually cut to commercial. It was delightful.
It was quite cute. I also really liked that it was Betty taking like ownership of her own sexuality and how she expresses herself, and like unlike other episodes it felt more impactful in terms of like story instead of just being like, oh look, here's a pretty girl in underwear.
Yeah. Archie's so cute. Anytime KJ gets to do a little funny goofy 50s dance, I'm happy.
Yes.
But I did think it was weird that Julian and Cheryl are dancing together. Well, what's going on, guys? Come on.
It's the Blossoms, you know what's going on.
But I also feel like Julian is on the basketball team. Like, when does he have time to come to these? I don't know. It's just like, I think that they really like screwed themselves over canon-wise by saying it happens every single day, you know?
I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe not everybody shows up every day, but like if Cheryl's one of the dance captains, then you'd think that she would. And we just saw her last episode do something else after school. So anyway, whatever. So Alice yells at Betty again. She says she could have gotten the station in trouble and calls her out of control. Betty says she's actually in complete control and she knew exactly what she was doing. She politely asks Alice if she can stop being part of Riverdale Grandstand. Alice yells at her and says fine, but she broke her heart, and Betty does not seem to regret anything.
I don't think she should regret a single thing.
Blanche said, no, Alice, don't emotionally manipulate your daughter. You're so sexy. I love this continuation. I don't think Alice is in the right, but I also understand why she's upset. You know, she's just like you. I think she feels like she's being manipulated by Betty, you know? Like, well, she's, I mean, just like you.
That's their entire relationship, is Alice trying to control Betty and Betty being like, no, I'm good, actually.
Yeah, and also she's just like, you put, like, our livelihood, your parents' livelihood in jeopardy to do this, you know? Like, I always try and, like, think about how the parents feel about stuff because, you know, they're, like, my favorite characters. And, so, yeah. I think that, like, nobody's in the right here.
See, I was really on Betty's team for this. It was a complete reclamation of her own bodily autonomy.
Yeah. I guess it's just, like... And, like, that's fine. I think, that's great. I think that if it had been, like, a dance that she was at, then it would have been great. The fact that it was, like, on TV and could, like, I don't know, make her parents pay a fine. Like, it could, like, I just... And it's not like her parents are good people right now anyway. I don't know. It's just, like, yeah, I don't know.
It's okay. You could just say that you have bias for Alice while also recognizing that Betty could own her.
Oh, all right.
You know?
Okay. Yeah. So Betty walks down the hallway at school and everyone stares at her. She seems pretty smug about it until she runs into Werther's, who asks to see her in his office. This is a really cool juxtaposition from the beginning of the episode when she was getting all of this attention and she didn't care for it, and now she does like the attention. So that's nice that she feels better about it. And Werther's is like, hey, will you please come into my office and talk to me? And Betty's like, oh no, I'm good. No, I don't want to. No.
You know what? That's a pass, actually.
No, thanks. Werther says Alice called him to talk about Betty and her behavior. Betty says, yeah, she has a mind and desires that are so concerning. Werther's writes something down and calls her tortured, which makes me feel like they might be sending Betty to the sisters now, too, which would also be an Easter egg, because Betty's been to the sisters in the past.
Yeah, I strongly suggest we're about to see a lot of questionable choices with female agency.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Meadow were like, what does Werther's have to do with it? Why is it even his business? And then we realized he's like the child psychologist or like the guidance counselor or something. So what a great person to hire as a guidance counselor.
Right?
Great work. Amazing. And that's it.
We did it.
Segments?
Yes.
All right. Our first segment is, what did Blanche think? She told me she was going to send a voicemail. As of this recording, she hasn't sent it to me yet, but if I get it, I will put it in here.
Alrighty.
Hey, Riverdalians, it's Blanche. So, you will know that I have to toot the episodes that Alice is in. Even if she's problematic, I'm looking away. I do not see it. And that is a joke, by the way. But anyways, what I really wanted to talk about this episode is surprisingly the Kevin plot. I thought that the stuff with Tom and Twyla Twist was just really upsetting and scary. And I do understand that this is a reality, even nowadays, for a lot of people. But why change Tom's character so much? And I do have beef with him in, like, the earlier seasons over his treatment of the Joneses. But putting that aside, he and Kevin's relationship was always something that I really enjoyed. And that's basically the gist of it, that I'm unhappy about that. But I don't understand why they can leave Archie as this nice boy that wants to be friends with everybody and is, like, anti-racist, anti-homophobic. But they're making all the parents really over-the-top terrible. And even, like, Alice, who you all know I'd die for and will defend to the ends of the earth. But she was never this bad in our timeline. And the thing that always drew me into loving the parent characters on this show was how real they were. Most of them, I mean. Specifically in the earlier seasons. And I just feel kind of gross about the writers getting rid of those good and human parts of them. And how they've just, like, made them into caricatures of bad 50s parents. And also unrelated, but I'm kind of glad there's no Brad Ray Barry anymore, or whatever his name was. I think if Jughead is going to have an adult in his life, it needs to be one of or both of his parents. Anyway, those are my thoughts. I really don't mean to be complaining in every single one of these voicemails, because I do always have a great time watching Riverdale, and it is my comfort show. I love it. But this is just some food for thought. And thanks for having me again. Let me know what you think. Okay, love you, bye!
My next segment is, which character needs a hug the most? It's going to Kevin. It is going to Kevin.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, but not one of those creepy hugs the Twyla Twist gave him.
Oh, yeah, no, ew. A proper one. Yeah. A real hug.
Yeah.
And my segment is, which MILF was the most badass? There were no badass MILFs in this. There were MILFs.
Yeah.
They were not badass. So, yeah. No one gets it.
Archie gets
it. Archie gets it.
Archie can have it. What is Sam shipping the most? Sam is shipping Barchie this episode.
Shocking for her.
Nice. Asexual Jughead? Question mark? Yeah, why not?
Yeah, sure. It's still possible.
Nothing says no.
Exactly.
But Tabitha's coming back next episode. So excited.
Yeah, I am anxiously awaiting that.
And now it's time for our best line award. My best line award goes to Jughead for...
Hey, Mr. Ribberry. Oh, sorry. Can I come in?
He just barges in.
He's just so very rude.
He just is always, like, in his own little mind, and he goes, oops, I forgot to be polite.
Bro, I completely forgot to pick a favorite line award.
Oh, I picked one for you. It goes to Veronica.
Oh, and my favorite line award goes to Veronica for...
They're suspending my allowance and making me get an after-school job? Smithers, this is child abuse.
That was gonna be the one I picked! I watched it and I was like, oh, it's this one.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I know, because I think I had I texted you about it a couple days ago.
Fantastic, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I was like, yeah, Brittany will like that one.
Yep.
There you go. Smithers, this is child abuse!
Smithers, how dare you?
Blanche's favorite line award actually goes to a moment that I will be gifting and posting on our Tumblr, but it's just the moment where Alice sticks her tongue out at Belly. I've been listening to The Summer I Turned Pretty audiobook, can you tell? Where Alice sticks her tongue out at Betty at the dance show right before Betty does her twirl.
As for the trailer, the blurb for the next episode is, I've been waiting for this episode, dude. I have been waiting. Okay. The new kid in town. In order to keep Riverdale High's basketball legacy alive, Frank and Archie recruit a new player to the team, a quiet farm boy named Reggie Mantle.
Finally.
Tabitha's return to school inspires Tony to start a literary society for Riverdale's black students. Alice forces Betty to join the River Vixens, and Kevin starts a new job at the Babylonium. To be close to Clay, I assume.
Oh my god, Betty's joining the River Fictions?
Like, I can't be mad, but also, like, Alice forcing her to do more things.
Oh boy.
Seems like you didn't learn your lesson.
Yeah.
So Tabitha's back in this episode. We do not see her in the trailer. We do see Reggie, but I'm so excited to see Tabitha next
Same.
Episode. So Frank says, we have ourselves a new player. And we see Reggie, like, playing a bunch. There's honestly, like, a lot of shots of Reggie making baskets and stuff. Just to, like, take up time, I guess. Frank later says to Archie, a kid who knows how to win games. We see Betty and Veronica at a game. We see Veronica at the Babylonium, I think. And she says, he's a hunk. Which I am so thrilled you think so. Because I feel like little himbo Reggie, who's, like, not mean, will be, like, perfect for her.
Exactly.
And I bet if he's, like, a little farm boy, he probably doesn't even know about her. He doesn't even know she's a celebrity, and I bet she loves that.
Oh, she's gonna eat him right up.
Eee! I'm so excited. We see Betty applauding, and Archie to Frank, back in that other scene where Frank says, a kid who knows how to win games, Archie says, what's his name? And then Reggie goes, I'm Reggie Mantle. It's great!
It's goofy as hell. I'm excited.
Yeah, he's saying it to Cheryl, Veronica, Archie, Betty, and Kevin in, like, the student lounge. And then we get sort of, like, flashes of Jughead, Archie, and Betty's faces at some point during the episode. I think Reggie deserves this kind of iconic treatment. I love it so much.
Yes.
And I think this was actually kind of smart of them, because they made Julian comics Reggie, because they know that we love our Reggie so much that they changed it. And actually, I can't complain, because if I had to watch our Reggie do all the terrible things Julian's doing, it would have been so sad, you know?
I completely agree.
But if they're willing to do this for Reggie, why not for these parent characters?
Because
why is Tom... You know,
Reggie's a teenager. Because, like, the teens are our heroes.
Because Reggie's one of the main characters, and he's a teenager. Yeah, but I'm just like, if we love Reggie, and so they replace Reggie so that he doesn't have to be mean, just sucks that this is happening to Tom.
So true.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode.
Our music is Terminal by Good News Tunes.
And thank you to those who shared space with us while we recorded this podcast. Thank you to my dog, who is looking at me with baby eyes, and I'm not really sure why.
He's like, are you done yet? It's food time.
Are you okay? I know, it's almost time, we're almost done.
Exciting.
What about you?
Mine is my whole apartment. My wife, our friend Emily, and our cats.
Love them, they're the best.
Thank you to Sheila Daly, aka Blanche, for writing our scene-by-scene notes.
Yes, and if you're a fan of The 100, we'd like to talk about that show too. We did seasons 4 to 7 as they were airing, and then we're going back to do the good old days, so season 3 is done, and we're in the middle of season 2, but we are on hiatus for Riverdale because I simply cannot do it all at the same time.
Have you tried?
No, but I'm scared.
I'm just messing with you, don't do that. Yeah.
I won't, thank you.
Okay. If you're a fan of Stranger Things, we like to talk about that show too. We are currently on hiatus, but we are on season 4 of Stranger Things.
Yes, and if you're a fan of Lost, we like to talk about that show too. Not on hiatus, but it does come out monthly. Seasons 1 to 3 are done, and then we're in season 4. Is our longest, most big brain podcast. We have guests over there and a spoiler section at the end. So if you want to watch along for the first time, like while you're watching for the first time, that would mean the world to me. And it's possible, and you can. So I recommend it.
You can, so you should.
Yeah.
You can follow the Aficionados on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and our new TikTok.
Yeah, please. Our Patreon, like I said earlier, patreon.com/theaficionados. If you like what we do here, please consider donating, because it's expensive with our money and it's expensive with our time, and we'd really appreciate your help. If not, recommend us to a friend, because that's free, or check out our small businesses. All of those are in the description. Thank you.
You can follow me on Twitter at Britannia, which is BRITTANIA with an underscore at the end.
And you can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey, that's RobynEJefferey, pretty much everywhere. Our next episode is called Hoop Dreams, episode 708. Hoop Dreams is a 1994 American documentary film. It follows the story of two African-American high school students in Chicago and their dream of becoming professional basketball players.
I wish that we were in our present timeline. Thank you. That's my one complaint.
Yeah. However, I think they're heading back, like, filming-wise. I think they're in the regular timeline again.
Thank God.
I think they are. Okay, love you, bye!
Okay, love you, bye!